Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, it is me at the top of the episode to say no, you have not missed an episode. I'm doing side B before I do side A because I mucked up. I missed recall with a guest. They turned up to the studio. I was not there. And I don't want to deprive them because I did some research on the song. So I'm going to do that next week. You'll hear side A. For now, though, you're going to hear side B. And it is a very good episode, so don't worry about that. Hey, while I've got you here, let's talk about Comedy Festival, which is starting this week. Is it? The gala's on tonight. That's all I know. Anyway, so I'm doing some shows. If you're a parent or a guardian and you have kids aged between 4 and 10, bring them along to Humankind at the Q Courthouse, 11:30 on weekends. That's AM, not PM. I've had a few people say, is it PM? It's a kid show, guys. Come on, get with it. 11:30 at Q Courthouse. It's a super, super fun show, super nice show, sweet show, kind show, all those kind of things you want your kids to see and be involved. It's also very, very funny. So that's also good. So if you've got kids, come along. If you'd like to see me do the podcast, I'm doing 6 different podcasts. So 5 of them are Don't You Know Who I Am's, 4 Saturdays, 3 o'clock at the European Beer Cafe, which is now called Morris House. Great lineups. It's all ticking in. It's all locking together. And I'm super, super excited to bring these 4 shows to you. Plus, I have 2 shows at the Festival Club as part of the Comedy Festival. So Max Watts. So April 4, the live best of the best of 97. Greg Larson is going to join me as my kind of brains trust. Performances by people like Michelle Brazier, Geraldine Quinn, Ben Russell. Who else is doing stuff? Gillian Cosgrove, Jude Pearl. It's going to be great. So make sure you get your tickets. Then on April 18, another Don't You Know Ham at Max Watts. Great, great lineup. Make sure you get tickets to that. All tickets will be found at joshearl.com.au. Big thanks to everyone who are Patreon subscribers. You guys are the best. You keep the lights on. Brand new Patreon episodes are going up every single week as well of Pod Machine. But during Comedy Festival, if you're not in Melbourne, but you want to hear all these podcasts, the only place you'll ever hear them is at Patreon. Even the best of the best of 97 is going up exclusively on Patreon. Anyway, to get that, it's patreon.com/dykwia. It's $5 US a month, and you get access to all the different podcasts I do. That's heaps from me. Enjoy this episode. Hums and Hits, Volume 23, Side B. Hello, Gompies, and welcome to Hums and Hits, Volume Pod. I'll explain later, Luca. We're talking Volume 23, Side B this week. My name is Josh Earl, and this week, first time on the pod, can you please welcome into your ears, into your hearts, it's Luca Muller, everyone. Yay.
Yay. Hello, Gompies. What's going on?
There you go. Getting on board. It's good. Hey, thanks for doing this.
Man, of course. Thanks for having me. I've been seeing you post about it and thought, geez, I'd like to do that podcast one day.
Oh, that's good. Well, we're talking about songs from 1997.
Yes.
When were you born?
I was born in 1993.
Great.
So this is
great.
My peak music listening era.
Hopefully it's an education for you. Hopefully I'm introducing you to a bunch of songs. Because you do stuff on Triple J, and you do you program the comedy at Splendor in the Grass?
Yes, I do.
So you know your music.
I'm involved in the music world.
When you were a kid, were you into music as well?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I've never been good at playing music, and I don't have any sort of sense of rhythm in my body or soul at all. But big music lover, it was my first love, I would say. It's great.
Were your parents, did they listen to music in the house?
Yeah, big time. My parents actually used to run a folk club before I was born.
Oh, cool. Whereabouts?
In Echuca. Well, I guess it was technically just a night at a pub, but they had a monthly folk club and all sorts of cool people came and did it.
And was that the one where like people just bring their instruments and play along, or was it a proper, no, we're going to invite actual performers to do a show?
Yeah, actual performers. Yeah. They would have, I want to say like a Paul Kelly, I'm pretty sure, did it like sort of in the mid-80s or something like that. And yeah, they would have people just stay at their house for the weekend and they'd show them around town and then they'd play the folk club on the Friday or Saturday night or whatever it was and have a great time.
That sounds like something Darren Hanlon would do today.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm sure he does it. So did you, growing up, I know you're on Triple J now.
Mm-hmm.
Was like Triple J, Hottest 100, all that kind of stuff. Did you collect those compilation CDs?
Yeah, definitely. As I was driving over here, I was trying to think of what compilation CDs I had when I was younger.
Yeah.
Was never a So Fresh guy. That was sort of the big one of my age group, I guess. Had a lot of the Hottest 100s. And then I think when I like started driving, as soon as I turned 18, picked up a bunch more because you just see them at the petrol station. You're like, oh, 101 road trip songs. Yep. Great.
I thought you were going to say the Vans Warped Tour.
God, actually, I think I did have one of those.
Yeah. I had one that was like just short songs. It was like, I can't remember what it was
called.
Short
music for short people.
That's it.
It's Fat Records compilation. It's great.
So 30 second songs or something like that. And it was just, that was first year uni cranking that out.
And there's 101 songs on there. And because CD players couldn't show the graphic for 100, you'd get to 99 and then it'd go back to 0 and then 1. I remember it very specifically.
So cool.
My brother did work experience when he was a teen at, I want to say, Greville Records. Is that a record shop or company in Melbourne?
That Greville Records is in over in Paran.
Yeah, right.
Windsor area. So you tell your story and I'll tell my story off the back of it.
But he did, work experience there and left from our country town of Chuka where we grew up and went to the big city for the week and worked at the thing and came back with just like bucket loads of CDs that they had given him. And that was, I think, probably my first proper head first into music. And there was a few compilations in there and stuff. Yep. I was like, damn, this is it.
So I went in there. I was growing up, huge Lemonheads fan.
Yeah.
And Evan Dando always talked about Graham Parsons. So when I came over from Tassie, I went into Greville Street Records and they had Graham Parsons' GP album.
Man.
And I bought that, took it home to where I was, took it back to where I was staying, listened to it and went, this is not for me. Took it back the next day and said, look, I bought this yesterday. I'm not into this.
How old are you? Very, very confident.
18, 19.
Yeah, damn.
Yeah. And then the guy looked around going, oh my God, thank you're so lucky you said it to me and not everyone else in the store because they would fucking chase you out of the store. And I was like, oh, cool. And he let me change it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I changed it to a Wilco album. And that was the first Wilco album I owned.
Oh, so, great. Yeah. And that changed the course of your life, would you say?
Almost named my kid Wilco.
Damn, really?
Yeah, but we changed in the last week.
Wow.
Yeah, to a Fleet Foxes song. That's where we're at. Anyway, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Volume 23, Side B. So this came out in 1997, in the middle of 97. And we're kicking off with a band that I think the compilation, like EMI, Polydor, were really trying to push this band in Australia. And at this stage, we weren't having a bar of it. This is the Irish boy band, Boyzone, and this is their song, Picture of You. So funny coming off like all of grunge and this, and they're still this home music out there.
This was a real, I would say, low light on the collection for me. How brutal is that trumpet sound? It's like the most overproduced garage band sounding shit. So this is, what's his name? Brian McFadden?
Yeah.
Yeah, who later became sort of a quasi-TV celeb.
Yeah, was he and Delta Goodrum together for
a bit? I think so, yeah.
I
believe so.
I always get him and Ronan Keaton mixed up.
Yeah, big time. And I think they were on TV. One was on X Factor and one was on Australia's Got Talent at the same time. Yeah, not the worst thing, but doesn't do much for me, this song.
It's an okay pop song.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it. So when I saw it, I thought, oh, is this a cover of The Cure?
Oh,
Pictures of You. I thought that would have been amazing, but it's not. This was the first single from their third album, Where We Belong. So this was released like almost 6 months before the single was.
Yeah, right.
They were so excited about it. Went to number 2 in the UK and Ireland, number 1 in Scotland, 39 here.
Have some respect.
But it's best remembered and you might even know this, as the end credit song for the 1997 classic Bean, aka Bean, the ultimate disaster movie.
What? Is it really?
Yeah,
I do not remember that. I know the
movie.
As soon
as the credits start rolling, this song comes on. And for comic relief, Bean joined Boyzone. And
oh, this does ring a bell. I can see that in my head.
Yeah.
Bean Zone.
So the movie, if those haven't seen the ultimate disaster movie, it's Mr. Bean is working as a gallery, security.
Yeah.
And his boss hates him, try to get him fired, mm-hmm. and can't because there's no reason. And so he figures out a way to send him to America to transfer this $50 million painting. And then he gets confused to be like this art expert, and shenanigans begin.
And this happened in the 90s, you say?
Yeah. 1997.
Crazy.
So it opened in Australia first, Bean. They tested the
really?
Waters, yeah, in this little backwater.
Yeah, right.
And got to number one in the box office, and it was there for 2 weeks until Men in Black came along and
wow.
knocked it off.
Man, hot era. Yeah. Hot era. So we loved the Bean movie, but as soon as those final credits rolled,
we're like, we're out.
Title, oh, what the fuck is this?
We're out of here. Here's a fun fact about the movie. In America, it grossed almost $30 million on its first weekend, but there was controversy because apparently a lot of teenagers bought tickets to Bean, and then when they got their ticket ripped to go in and it was like the multiplex, they then snuck into Starship Troopers because that was rated R. Oh. And apparently the Starship Troopers, the cinemas were full,
wow.
and the Bean ones weren't. But yeah, all those 13-year-olds going, I'm going to go see Starship Troopers.
That's sick. That's a great move. I mean, it's a vastly superior movie.
It's such a good film.
It's awesome.
It was the first, because when it came out, I was like, I'm not really into, like, because I never watched Star Wars and stuff like that.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
Not into sci-fi. And then everyone was like, no, this is like a piss take on sci-fi.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'll watch it. And I was like, oh, this is actually...
Yeah, I had the same thing. I'd never seen it until maybe a couple of years ago. And I just had written it off as, some shitty like Star Trek clone or whatever.
Yep.
And then I think I watched some of Verhoeven's other movies. I was like, oh, this guy's actually good. And he made Starship Troopers. What's that about?
Yeah.
And then, man, it rules.
Yeah. So Roger Ebert gave the film... this just tells you what I think about the song. I'm just talking about the film.
Yeah. It really speaks to sort of the... There's not that much to dive into with that song.
He gave it 2.5 stars, saying that he... praised the film for having many moments that were very funny, but he said the runtime of 90 minutes was too long. He says, at an hour, Bean would have been non-stop laughs, but then they added 30 minutes of stops. Which is great. Such a
great line. I love that, you know, nowadays it's like, oh, movies are 3 hours long. Can they go back to being 2 hours long? And back then it's like, we want 60 minutes.
I'm always like, when I see a runtime of 86 minutes, going, this film must be so bad. Because there's no way they only wrote 86 minutes of movie.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
All right, that's Boyzone.
Nice.
Picture
out of the way.
Get it out of the way. All right, a band that we're talking about so much lately, and I don't think it's going to stop for about 6-7 more episodes. This is the Girls of Spice.
Oh, yes.
And their first ever ballad. This is Mama. Starts off with a real bachelor girl hit by a train kind of vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it's some of the most iconic 90s sounds all mashed into one song.
Yeah.
I think this is a nice song. I listened to this whole CD on, you know, Spotify playlist as I was sort of mucking around cleaning around the house this morning. And this one came on. I listened to about half of it before checking and realizing, oh, this is the Spice Girls. It's like, not that I have any problem with them, but I was surprised by it.
Yeah, so it's a song about realizing that your parents, especially, or your mum, had your best interests at heart, even though they might have been a bit mean.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's a nice little message. And I think it just shows that the Spice Girls / their record companies and producers, they knew where their bread was buttered.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, these are teen girls. They need to reconnect with their mums. This is going to be big.
I've been working on a bit similar, not similar to this, but like,
does it have the
yeah, it has a guy who comes out and scratches That guy touring with the Spice Girls just for that bit.
Oh, man.
That'd be awesome. No, but it's how my relationship with my parents is similar to my relationship with the TV show The Simpsons. So for the first 10 years, they can do no wrong.
Yeah, loved it, couldn't live without it.
The best. Then at about year 13, I'm going, is this not as good as it used to be, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Have I changed or have they changed? And then by year 20, I'm going, this is dog shit. I hate this. And now, year 30, whatever, I'm like, I'm just impressed it's still going.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Well, they're trying their best, you know.
Yeah. They're not going to change. So this was released as a double A-side with the much superior song, in my opinion, Who Do You Think You Are?
Great song.
A banger. Who Do You Think You Are could have been an alternative name for my other podcast. So this is like all the songs on Spice written by the band, with a couple of co-writers, Matt Rowe and Richard Stannard, although Richard Stannard in interviews later said this one was mostly written by Mel B. She had the idea for it.
Nice.
And the other members just contributed to a verse each.
Yeah, right.
And so that's how they do it. They go, all right, this is the theme for the song. Go off and write a verse, come back, and this is the music.
It's quite nice.
Yeah.
It's heartwarming. So
it was the first time they did a ballad, and the critics were mixed on the fact they were doing ballads. The Daily Mirror said this about it. Yuck. We don't want our Spice Girls sweet tar very much. Jeez. They should concentrate on the raunch and let Daniel O'Connell take care of the mums. So I was like, fucking
God.
Just the worst.
We don't want range. Just be a sexy girl and shut up.
Exactly.
You don't
that,
have a mum as far as I'm concerned.
don't bring like real world into this. Yeah. We just want to objectify you.
Damn.
It was their fourth number one single, and that put them in the record books as the first UK group to have all four first singles go to the top spot.
There you go.
Yep. Previous record holders were Jerry and the Pacemakers, Jive Bunny and the Master Mixers, and Frankie Goes to Hollywood. They all had three each.
Man.
But their fourth one, they couldn't crack it.
Can't keep up with the Spice Girls.
Australia, this only got to 13 in Australia.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
But I'm not sure if it was released as a double A-side here.
Yeah, right.
Which, yeah. But this is how big they were at this stage of their career. They did a live pay-per-view concert called Spice Girls in Concert Wild.
Man.
And I'm not sure what wild, why it was added. Like, Spice Girls in Concert is enough. And I'm thinking maybe this is like, to trick dudes into thinking it was like a Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
So if you type in Girls Wild, it comes up.
Eyes are blurry because you're so horny. Yeah, I think that's it.
But they performed this song in the concert, but then when they released the concert on VHS, this song wasn't in it.
What the hell?
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
And look, I didn't watch that. Maybe they fucked up during the concert, but yeah. But they did a live pay-per-view.
I like it. I get people want the, you know, more high energy, high tempo pop bangers from the Spice Girls or whatever, but I like it. And especially at a concert, I like seeing how an artist handles the rise and fall in the energy of their songs and stuff.
Exactly. I always think when bands, and Kings of Leon are the prime example of this, they just got too big for the songs that they were playing. So they had to write like
stadium songs.
Yeah, stadium songs. Yeah. And people are like, this sounds awful. And I'm like, well, it feels the stadium when they play. So, yeah. All right. Moving on, this song, I've not thought about this song in, 26 years? But it took me straight back. This is Brain Bug and their song, Nightmare.
You know, this song sounds exactly like Bad Guy by Billie Eilish.
Yeah.
Like, exactly the same.
Duh. Yeah, that's... Phineas might be getting, after this podcast goes out, a little tap on the shoulder from some lawyers.
I wondered about it. It's pretty remarkably similar. Mostly that part right there is the part we just listened to is the most similar part. But that, it has the exact same beat, the exact same tempo, and whatever that little doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, it's the exact same.
Except it doesn't have the Australian traffic lights on that he loves to talk about on every talk show. Which is amazing. That clip is an incredible clip. Showing it to Jimmy. One of the Jimmys.
One of the Jimmys.
Alright. That's it.
So, right at the drop.
Alright, we'll keep playing. There you go. That was worth it. So this is Italian DJ, producer, and guitarist Alberto Bartepelle.
Nice.
So he's performed under many aliases. These are his other band names or alias names. Alzheimer's.
Sure.
Corn on the Cob. Humdrum. Space Christ.
Man.
And his final one, Ice Cube.
What?
did gigs under Ice Cube.
That's sick. And this is in the 90s. This is a guy before his time. Yeah. This is like a SoundCloud rapper before SoundCloud even existed. You know, I got all my little projects and their different names. And also I'm Ice Cube.
So this was his debut single. Got to 14 in Australia. Also came in at 85 in the Hottest 100 that year.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so it had a pretty good mass appeal. So it was played on commercial radio.
Yeah.
Plus also on the J's.
It was a cool sort of... there's similar songs from a similar period, like where house music was transitioning to becoming a little bit more mainstream, and they sort of integrated into pop music and stuff. And I like this song.
Yeah, this fits in with, if you made a compilation, you could put this and Here's Johnny
on
the same compilation. One group of people who loved this song was the football club Manchester City.
Yeah.
And during 97, they were played before games.
Wow.
As the whole team. And then also, they still to this day sometimes play it at the stadium they play in. I think it's Etihad Stadium is where they play. The Manchester one. As they're warming up.
Wow.
So it's still like 23 years later, 26 years later, still getting a run.
That's one I was
curious. Alberto is no longer with us though.
Oh, rip.
Yeah, he joins a club of performers who died on stage.
Really?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, he was playing in a band.
Yeah.
In 2016, had a heart attack, and according to reports which I read, which were translated from an Italian newspaper, I had to do the Google Translate. There were multiple nurses in attendance, but they couldn't revive him before the ambulance got there.
Whoa, that's crazy. I had no idea.
Which I was thinking about this. Is it like, you know, there's no great way to go.
Yeah.
But if you're doing a gig, that must be a pretty good way.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Probably at the peak of your sort of dopamine and adrenaline and everything. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
And so what, 2016, how old was he, do you know?
57.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that's young, but...
Pretty young.
Yeah. Shit.
Yep. But,
damn, you know, rest in peace, Alberto.
Still doing music at 57.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Made a life for himself.
Yeah.
Invented Billie Eilish.
Yes.
He was in NWA. Yeah.
He was called Corn on the Cob for a bit. All right. Oh, an absolute banger. When you thought, listeners of this show, that Eurodance was behind us.
Yes.
We have one of the premier songs of the genre. This is Mr. President and their song, Coco Jambu.
Yes. This song goes hard as shit.
Well, during the live Best of 97 at the Festival Club, you'll hear Oliver Clark do his rendition of this song.
Yeah. I can't wait to see that. Mr. President, here he is. I'm saluting. Me and Josh are both saluting in the studio right now.
Actually, only one of us is. The other one's saying, not my Mr. President.
Yeah, it's good shit. It's good. Really good shit.
It's really good. It's so dumb. So that was... that was... Coco Jambu.
Mm-hmm.
Jambu, I should say, not Jambu. Mm-hmm. So Germans, they were. Not all of the members were German, but they started in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
This song got to number one in Austria.
Hell yeah.
The Czech Republic.
Hell yeah.
Sweden.
Hell yeah.
Switzerland.
Hell yeah.
And of course, listeners, Hungary. Hungary loved it. It was got pretty big hit. Seven here.
Nice.
And it got 21 in the US.
Great.
Yeah.
This is a song that I feel like it's existed in my subconscious for my whole life without ever really knowing when it came out or who it was by or what its story is.
There's another song coming up that I feel the same way about.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, and hearing it pop up on my little playlist this morning, I was thrilled.
When I saw it on, like, when I did the compile of all the songs, I saw it come up. I was like, oh,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to that episode.
It's a belter.
It is. So this is the group, when they started off, these were the members. A person called T7,
mm-hmm.
Lady Danny, and Sir Prophet. Now, Sir Prophet was the MC, but in 94, Sir Prophet, not seeing many profits, left the band.
Ooh.
Replaced by British rapper Lazy D, real name Delroy Ranals, who is currently the only member of Mr. President.
Oh, really?
And he performs as Delroy Ranals, formerly Mr. President. That's his performance name.
Former President Delroy Ranals.
What do you think his life is like? He's going around still cashing in on the Coco Jambu.
This one would still, I imagine, get a pretty big reception.
Yeah.
Do they have any other songs?
They've got other songs. None of them as big as this one.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, what's the... I bet he pops up on weird little festivals and, like, similar to, like, an R&B Fridays. You know how they do the live tours here?
Yeah.
Some of the acts you see on that are like, what is their set?
He, I would say he would have to start with this song.
Totally.
So people know who it is.
Maybe start and finish. I've heard of acts doing that. Apparently, I think Sophie Ellis Bextor did that at...
Murder on the Dance Floor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it.
Yeah, people love it. Yeah. People know what they're in for. And it's like, shows some level of self-awareness, I suppose, of like, yeah, this is the fucking big one. I'm not going to pretend like you know many of my other songs.
Well, when I saw Daryl Braithwaite do Horses, he stretched that to like a good 12 minutes.
That's a pretty sick move as well. Really chuck a few little intervals in there, have a little solo in the middle.
He also said, do you remember this one? And played a Sherbet song. And I was like, oh, Daryl. This audience is 19. They don't remember it. I'm sorry, mate.
You're a meme to them.
Yeah. I think Delroy, hopefully he's really enjoying it still.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not just, oh, fuck, I've got to...
Yeah, totally.
...put on the Lazy D hat. And
that song of all songs to have to put on a fake smile, you know, try to do your little dance.
Yeah.
Not the one.
I would imagine his life is a lot, you know, in the English office, but when they... The Christmas special when David Brent's left the paper office and he's gone around the nightclubs. I reckon this guy does that kind of thing. Goes around the nightclubs, totally. They play it, they have a few drinks, and then they go. All right, moving on. They're back, people.
Oh, boy.
They're back in a big way.
Oh, boy.
This is the boy band who will beat me up. This is Culture and their song Always Be. That's Luca crying.
I'm weeping. It's too sad. It's too emotional. Why would they beat you up?
They're some big boys. Are they? Sing some sweet songs.
I had no idea they were so big. Definitely sweet songs.
I think this is the fifth time they've been on the compilations.
I feel like I'm going to get a massage. It's very relaxing.
It does sound like one of those ones in the like. The supermarket, not like Northland or Westfield or something like that.
Yeah, put a blindfold on you, rub your feet.
And at the end, just do that. Bashing you.
So, what's their biggest song?
I get them confused with a bunch of other bands.
Because I saw the name, I was like, I know that name, and this song sort of rung a bell, but not really.
There comes a time when it's Shaka Jam. Fly Girl.
I mean, you know, I have no issues with it, but it's real landfill R&B.
Well, it's like, obviously, they loved Boys to Men.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's be Australian/New Zealand Boys to Men.
Yeah.
And look, I think they've achieved that.
Yeah, they tick the box.
Just without the sales. But, you know, just fuck, it's hard in this industry. Alright, we've listened to a minute 30 there. I can't play anymore. The song goes for 5 minutes though.
It's long,
it's
slow.
It's a 5
song.
Minute song.
Yeah.
I like this. It was the second single from their album Take Your Time. Got to 25 here, 34 in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot find the film clip for it on YouTube, and I'm sure it would have had one because it was like released as a single, and back in those days you would have done a film clip for it.
You got
so
it.
You could play it on Rage and Video Hits. They have a dedicated YouTube channel, which I'm not sure if they run or it's fan run, but I would say maybe they they're distancing themselves from this song.
Yeah, right.
Maybe this is like, if they get back together, they're just going to pretend this song never happened.
What's their problem with it?
I don't know. I mean, maybe the slow, deep talking bit must suck to perform live.
It's too sexy. People would get too horny at the shows.
But I just don't know what more I can say about Culture.
Yeah, really does nothing for me.
Yeah. And it's weird because it's like, it is a style of music that I don't know if we would still, like, there's no one in
totally
music doing this kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. You hear little elements of it pop up in people like Lana Del Rey and Meg Back and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like sort of slowy, I guess, sort of R&B influenced, but it's gone. It's a real product of the late 90s.
Sure is. Hey, we're going to take a break now. We're going to come back after these messages.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back. And this is, you know how you said Coco Jumbo was a song that just was around and you didn't know who it was by, but it was just there. I feel the same with this song. This is a Glasgow band named after an American state. This is Texas and their song Say What You Want. Love those breathy backing vocals.
Yeah, really good.
20 seconds on my bedtime. I feel you're on the run.
Never live too long. See, this song to me, even though it does sound like it's from 1997,
yeah,
I would have sworn it was like late 80s, early 90s. And when
I get healing, I can no longer slide. Great song.
It is a good song.
Yeah. That's a real sort of popular 90s move as well. I'm sure you've covered it, but they're like super crisp, well-mic'd drums. Every decibel of that little snare hit.
We have not covered that, but it's a great point. Say what you want, but it won't change my mind. I feel the same about you.
And you can tell me your reasons, but it won't change my mind. And they have that, when I get that feeling, sort of, I don't know, what do you call that? It's like, well, interpolation or something like that, I think they call it, where it's like, sort of throws back to another song, but it's not really.
Yeah, alluding to another song.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So you go, oh, sexual healing, and then it's not, it's just we've taken the taken the line, which I think is something that Oasis do a lot.
Yeah, totally.
So, Glasgow band, they formed in 86. The band members, John McElhone of the band Altered Images and Charlene Spittery. They say they took their name from the Wim Wenders film Paris, Texas. But nah, guys, it's a state in America.
How do you say you took the name from anywhere?
Yeah. this is from their fourth album called White on Blonde. It's their most successful album. And this, you would say, is their most successful song. I mean, they did have another big hit in 89, but this one was the highest charting. It was peaked at number 3, got to 11 here. You know who liked this song?
Who liked it?
Wu-Tang Clan.
Really?
Yeah, they love this song and did a remix of it.
No way.
This is them with Method Man. RZA and Method Man remixed it, and then they performed it live with Texas at the MTV Music Awards.
Oh my God, I love it.
In 98. So here it is. Yeah.
Whoa. As I walk in the shadow of death, 16 men on a dead man's chest. Your whole death team is the H.O.T. And I get you, get splashed with the tech. Nobody goes to the guard, say so. You got a second or both to run for the dough. Before I blow back off the map contact. It ain't no stack, can't get down like that. When I get that beat, I can do it. Man, it works.
It's good.
That's sick.
All right. But yeah, I really liked it. I'd never heard that. And then I saw it. It was remixed by Wu-Tang Clan. I'm like, fuck, what is
this? That's crazy. Then, yeah. I love that. It really works.
It's really good. And then, so the horns are that from an Engelbert Humperdinck song.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Damn.
But it's... I would love to have been in or wherever Wu-Tang Clan were where they heard the Texas version first.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, this slaps. I like this.
Yeah, that's sick. It does have the thing that you were talking about where it just feels like you've known it for your whole life. It's been in you. Steely Dan has some quote about when they first started making music, they wanted to try to make music that it felt like you were remembering it from a previous life or whatever. It almost has that quality to it where it's like, it's not like it's predictable or knowable, but as soon as you hear it, you're like, oh, this song, it's like, I understand it immediately.
It's funny because in the 80s, when you know, synthesizers and that kind of technology came in, it dated so many artists who were trying to use that kind of technology and almost like the, like, not the real drums, but those electronic kind of drums and stuff like that. And so there's artists who I really like Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan, who in the 80s, it's dated those songs, whereas songs from the 60s and 70s just seem a bit more timeless.
Totally,
and I don't know why. And it sounds very old white man saying, oh, it doesn't sound the same as it used to. But it is something about those sounds which sound inauthentic.
It is so true, yeah. I guess with the, like, what's the word? Proliferation of the technology that people were using to record and produce and stuff. It became a little bit more, there were more widespread techniques or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But say what you want. Good song.
Good song.
Good song.
All stands up. Is Texas still around?
Yeah, they're actually not split up for a while, but they both went off and did other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking for news at them, and it's funny. So they met up for coffee and made the British papers that they are meeting up for coffee. And Charlene's put out a bunch of solo albums, and John McLaughlin works behind the scenes in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, wow.
But they've also been doing shows, and they had a new album, or hinted at a new album, like in 2021. Sick. So, yeah.
I'm into that. Man, Glasgow, small city in a small country, so much musical pedigree.
Have you ever been there?
I've been there for like 6 hours.
I was there for 24 hours.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and went and saw a band at King Tut's Wawa Hut, which is the famous live music venue where Alan McGee signed Oasis.
Yeah.
And I'm here, we've just got to go there. But it was one of those things where, because my brother lived in Edinburgh for years, and the reason me and my wife were there was because we were going to his wedding and in Edinburgh. And so we thought, oh, let's go to Glasgow for a day. And him and all his mates were like, don't, you'll get beat up. Don't
That's what
go.
People say.
Yeah. And we got there, we got the train, and we got off the train. And this was back in 2007. And so international roaming was too much. You couldn't just go Google Maps. So you had to take a photo of the map.
Awesome.
And then walk around with your phone trying to look, like zooming in and trying to look for it. And we were trying to do that. And this guy just came up to us with the thickest Glaswegian accent and said something to us.
God.
I was like, oh, fuck, I'm getting robbed here. And then he was like, I figured out, he was saying, where are you staying?
Yeah.
And we're like, told him, he goes, oh, I know where it is. I'll walk you there. Come on, come on. And then he just walked us there. Wanted no money, just wanted a conversation. Just this old guy at the train station, just waiting for people who were lost to go, oh, this will fill my day.
That's the best.
Then we went, we had a friend of my wife's husband from Glasgow, and he wrote an itinerary and said, you've got to do these things.
Yeah.
So we went to the Charles Remy McIntosh studio. This famous guy who made chairs, high back chairs. And I was like, this is going to be so fucking boring. It was so cool. It was great. I bought a little pin badge of it. I was like, this is so fucking cool. And then we went to the record store that Belle and Sebastian kind of hung out in and met and kind of thing and next to the Clyde. And so it was one of those days where I'm like, this is the perfect day and we've timed it amazingly. And I can't remember the band we saw.
Yeah.
But they were fine.
Yeah.
And it was one of those days. And then we went back to Edinburgh and everyone's like, oh, was it scary? I'm like, it was one of the nicest places I've ever been to. And every single person was super, super friendly.
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing the Fringe in Edinburgh and had booked one gig in Glasgow. So ducked over there, like caught the train over, did the gig and came back.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying the same thing. Like, oh, it's crazy. There's heroin and everyone bashed you over there. It was like, I didn't see much of it, but it was real nice. And the gig was one of the best gigs ever. It was sick.
Well, what's the suburb in Edinburgh that's a bit, they say it's rough? Is it Leith?
Leith, yeah.
Well, I was staying in Leith.
Mm.
Like, I had a couple of nights in, this is when I went over for the festival the year after, I was staying right on the mile, and then my accommodation there was only for like 10 days, and then for 4 days I was staying in Leith,
mm-hmm.
and would go to, and it was like a half hour walk.
Yeah.
And I'd just walk it. Yeah. And everyone's going, "You're insane. What are you doing?" I'm like, it's so safe. It's like the nicest fucking city. And I felt so safe walking around. There's people everywhere because yeah. it was fringe. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, yeah, I felt unsafe walking in Launceston at night. I've been beat up twice in Launceston. Like, here is fine.
Well,
yeah.
That was the guys from Culture, so that's different.
Yeah, because I bagged out their band. All right, moving on. Another British band. This is Eternal. We've talked about them before. This is their song, "Don't You Love Me."
The slow build up.
Does.
The tension.
But it does have a bit of a Destiny's Child kind of.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Feel to it.
Child goes to the store for love.
I definitely remember listening to this morning, but yep. I don't think it stayed in my brain very much at all. I definitely didn't notice the first line, "Child goes to the store for a loaf of bread."
Yeah, this is a song, a pop song about child abuse.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Shit.
Got some pipes on them, though. They're good.
Yeah, totally. Good voice. Good voice.
So this is their third album, could be "For the Rain." This is the first time on the podcast we've talked about a song dealing with child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I'd bring this up because Luca, are you named after the Susan Vega song "Luca"?
No.
Which also deals with child abuse.
It also deals with child abuse. People love to bring that up to me.
Spend your childhood with people going, "Oh, I like the song"?
All the time. Yeah. Still to this day. And then people sort of have a moment where they go, "Well, that song's about, shit." I sort of don't want to talk about it anymore. I don't think I was named after that song. I think it played some small part, but I was more specifically named after Luca Bloom, who's Irish, I think, musician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did a great covers album. And on it, he does a really good cover of "In Between Days."
Yeah.
And there was a TV show in the early 2000s, which Recovery went into, called the 10:30 slot.
Mm.
And he was a guest on there once. And I remember going, "Oh, that song is so fucking good."
There you go.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like maybe my parents they liked him, but weren't crazy fans. It's not like I was named after because of that, but they just thought, "Hey, that's a nice name."
We're the same with Oliver James.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
We named our son that because, one, I was walking one day and the song came on. I'm like, that's a really nice collection of names together.
Mm-hmm.
They sound good together. And then we bought a parenting book before we had kids, and from a secondhand shop, and in it was like, "To blah blah blah, congratulations on Oliver James." I'm like,
"Oh, wow,
it's a sign."
That is a sign.
Sorry, Wilco. Yeah, you're called
you're
Oliver
out.
James now. It's interesting with this song because at the time, this is a girl group. At the time, the biggest band in the world was a girl group, Spice Girls.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the same country as them. I would say, in terms of just voices, Eternal have better singing voices.
They got them covered.
But they just can't compete with Zigga Zigga. And that's the thing of, like, people want fun, dumb pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that sometimes in comedy as well. It's like, yeah, you can write a really clever bit about a really great social issue that has people laughing, but sometimes people just want to see Helen Badoo.
Yeah.
And it's really fucking funny.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I sort of like then that they went the other way and were like, "We'll be a bit more serious, intellectual, whatever."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a good song. Like you said, though, I could sing the chorus. I couldn't sing the verses for you.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure if that's a great thing for a pop song. All right, moving on. Oh, this is the second time we've talked about this band. We talked about them a couple of weeks ago. This is another UK band. This is Alicia's Attic and their song, "Alicia Rules the World."
Oh, yes.
her, but a child plays for pleasure, and she'll play with your heart until she breaks down your defenses one by one. So line up your soldiers and she'll shoot them all down, 'cause that he shall rule the world.
It's so English.
It's so English. Yeah, look, it doesn't blow me away, doesn't light my world on fire, but it's a nice little time. There's some nice production elements in the back.
All right, so that peaked at number 12 in the UK. It got to 26 in Australia.
Yeah, right.
Which surprised me. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago and had a few messages from listeners saying that Karen of the band, so there were two sisters, we talked about how she wrote songs for Kylie, Jessica Mauboy, and Lily Allen.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also written this year's Eurovision entry for the UK.
Really?
And look, this was... I only did the research last night, Luca. So this is an absolute... what's the word I'm looking for? When it wasn't planned. What's the word I'm looking for? Absolute...
spontaneous.
Not spontaneous. Well, there's a word. I can't remember, though. Anyway. It's like kismet.
Yeah.
Do you know the... what the person's name is who is representing the UK?
Oh my God, is it someone called Luca or something?
No, it's Mae Muller.
What?
Yeah.
Who is that?
Well, I mean, this is her song. This is the entry that that Karen Poole wrote as well.
Yeah.
For Mae Muller. It's called I Wrote a Song.
Whoa.
Yep.
You
didn't mention the cheating. You kept that one to yourself. I got some mad was gonna cut you out.
Yes, Muller clan, stand up. Muller's all day. I don't know if it's because whenever I'm listening to a Eurovision song, I'm aware of the fact it's a Eurovision song.
Yeah.
But there is some quality that they have in common. I don't know how to put my finger on it. They're all kind of like too earnest or too upfront or something like that.
But also like really light in the music.
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all about how she wrote a song. So it should be called I Co-Wrote a Song, because she co-wrote it with
I sang
Karen
a song.
Poole. Yeah. I had a song written for me. Yeah.
That's cool. You don't hear my last name very often.
But here's the thing. So the band, Alicia's Attic, had this album, and then they did another album, and two of the film clips were directed by a woman called Sophie Muller.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They've, this woman loves two the Mullers.
And I looked up, is Mae Muller and Sophie Muller anyway? No.
That's sick.
They're not connected at all.
Oh, my
but
God.
Sophie Muller, have you heard of Sophie Muller?
No.
She has directed, like, over 300 film clips.
Whoa.
And... fucking amazing. So she directed Don't Speak by No Doubt.
Yeah.
Stay by Shakespeare's Sister. Pretty much every video Annie Lennox ever did. So whoa. Eurythmics and her solo stuff. Sade, who she was friends with at St. Martin's College. They went to college together.
What?
She also directed a song we're going to speak about next week, Blur's Song 2.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. So she's done so many songs. Now, Karen Poole also, apart from writing songs for all these people... also wrote the songs for Bridget Jones's Diary, the musical.
Wow.
With Lily Allen and previous subject of the show, Greg Kirsten from the band Geggy Tar.
Whoa. This is a great career.
Yeah. But this is the thing. That musical was written in 2009. In 2010, it only got to the workshop stages. So no performances.
Mm.
The songs can't be found anywhere on the internet.
Whoa.
Lily Allen talks about how they're really fucking good songs and she really wants it to be made, but she... kind of like, this was in 2014. She's like, I think that dream's done.
Yeah,
I don't think
it's
going to get made. Even though they had people sign on for it. So the woman who wrote Bridget Jones's Diary, she wrote the script. These people wrote the songs.
Man.
But these are what the songs were called. I found that information. They're called...
intriguing.
If I Could Save Her From Sadness, Wanker, Happy, Falling All Over Myself, and the final one, all caps, Yummy.
Ooh.
Yeah. So they're... I really want them out. I want to hear them.
That's nutso.
What they did.
Yeah, damn. That is such a cool career for that woman. Like,
yeah.
You know, front a band, work in the music industry your whole life, produce a whole bunch of cool shit. Yeah. Still to this day, like, you know, pretty
collecting
relevant.
Those checks.
Damn. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. All for off the back of...
well, you hear that and you go, this person's got a lifetime of... Yeah. Music industry work ahead of them.
All right. Our final song for the episode. Was it last week or the week before we talked about him? He fucked a fugitive moments before she was gunned down climbing a fire escape. Mr. Sweat is back. Keith Pardon Sweat. Keith Sweat and his song, Nobody. Now, I think this is the type of song that Culture would have been listening to when they were recording Always Be.
100%.
I want to see you. I want to plead you. Mm-mm. I want to show you, man, that I need you. I want your body.
Mr. Sweat.
Very last
awesome, man. I feel bad saying this, but to me this is like, it's pretty good, it's alright, it's a bit, like I said before, landfill R&B, but when you hear it, it just makes me go, oh, this reminds me of D'Angelo, I want to listen to D'Angelo, or like, this is like Leon Ware, I should listen to Leon Ware, just like... Sweat man, he does have a good voice.
So this was big in the States, number one on the R&B charts, number three on the Billboard charts. Mm-hmm. Very hard in especially this time to crack the number one on the Billboard charts.
Yeah, what was up there? You know,
a lot of Celine Dion, a lot of Mariah Carey,
all that
kind of stuff. Got to 22 here because as a culture, we're not as sexually overt as the Americans.
It's true.
The female voice on that is Athena Cage. Mm-hmm. This sold. As a single, 1.8 million copies in the States, making it the 542nd highest-selling single in American Billboard history.
Damn.
Which, look, 542 is a high number, but when you think of all the songs released...
That's way up there.
It's amazing. If you're in the top 10,000, that's fucking incredible.
Yeah. Fuck, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
What's the Sweat Man doing these days, do you know?
He's still doing music. He's still releasing... I watched, I don't know, when I showed you the Wu-Tang clip before you saw my recommended videos. I watched a Breakfast Club interview with him, and he and Charlamagne, I don't know if you ever listened to the Breakfast Club, but Charlamagne the God, who's one of the hosts, and I think they might hang out.
Cool.
And so they, it was a very buddy-buddy kind of interview.
That's
sharing
it. He
stories.
He must be, what, 50 or something like
57
that?
57 or so. He looks great. And I watched, you know, I skimmed forward and watched a bit of it, but he tells a story about this song. You know, he wasn't a very confident guy, but then this song got him the girls.
Wow.
And he said, when you're overseas, and he was like going, and he said, in the 90s, it was harder to have sex with people.
Mm.
And he goes, you really have to put the groundwork in. And he goes, and as soon as they found out that I was the singer of Nobody, he goes, it worked for him.
Damn.
And then they asked him, was there a lot of pressure? And he goes, I wasn't sticking around. So... you know, not a great guy.
It is very sexy. It's real baby making music.
Yeah, it does have the line, I want to sex you. I do. I find it very funny when people, instead of saying, I want to have sex with you, they're just like, I want to sex, like the verb. Yeah, I just want to verb.
A caveman or an alien.
Because I remember in my primary school, a kid got in trouble. I don't know who it was, but he graffitied on the wall, sex a woman.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which... And that just that phrase still makes me laugh. Like,
that's
I remember
awesome.
Being grade three or four, just
sex
going,
a woman.
A year six kid wrote sex a woman on the wall. I don't know who it was, but yeah.
What do you think happened? He chucked up sex. He's like, that's not enough.
Sex, yeah.
Not just sex anyone.
All right. Not much more to say about Mr. Sweat. We've talked about him a fair bit on the podcast. All the good stories were in that one. But I think this song probably of all the songs we've heard that he's had a hand in, this one's probably up there as the best one.
Nice.
So what we're gonna do now is we do that at the end of every show, Luca. They say it's 100% hits. So we're gonna go through and see how many hits Luca Muller deems hits.
Interesting.
So we start with Picture of You by Boyzone.
Absolutely not.
Not a hit. Mama by Spice Girls.
I'd say it's a hit.
Nightmare by Brainbug.
Is that the
Billie Eilish one?
I'd say it's a hit.
Hit. Coco Jambu, Mr. President.
Definitely a hit.
Always Be by Culture.
Not a hit.
Say What You Want by Texas.
Hit.
Don't You Love Me by Eternal.
Not a hit.
Alicia Rules the World, Alicia's Attic.
Not a hit.
And Nobody, Keith Sweat.
It's clearly a hit.
Hit. That's 5 out of 9.
That's pretty good.
That's over half.
Nice.
It's 55%.
That is pretty good. Where's that rank in sort of the average?
A little bit down, although yeah. I think people, and we've had a lot of people comment this in the socials, people are too generous on the show.
Oh.
But, you know, that's fine. That's okay. Everyone's got their own, what makes it a hit for some people. Hey, thanks for doing this, Luca.
Man, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Got anything to plug?
Not really. Not doing festival this year. Listen to my other podcast, Too Spooky, I suppose.
Great.
You can be on the radio sometimes late at night or in April on the weekend afternoons. That'd be good.
Sick. Hey, if you're in Melbourne, Comedy Festival is starting like in a week's time. So if you haven't got tickets to one of the live podcasts I'm doing, go to joshua.com.au, 3 o'clock at Morris House, which is European Beer Cafe. Just look for all the scaffolding. It's going to look like a building site.
It's fucking hectic. I saw it yesterday.
Inside's safe. It's fine. Come to that or come to one of the festival club ones I'm doing April 4, which is the 100% hits one, best of 97, where you'll see Oliver Clark do Coco Jambu and Greg Larson. I just want to see Greg's face when he has to talk about it. And also April 18, the live Don't You Know Who I Am at Festival Club with Ed Gamble, Mark Watson, Deanne Smith and Sarah Schaefer. So tickets are at joshearl.com.au. Big thanks to everyone who's Patreon subscribers. You're the best. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.